This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform for creating a blog, website, portfolio, or an online store. Create your own space today by visiting squarespace.com and use offer code TREK9 to save 10%. And also by TrekFan, where you'll explore new places, learn new things, and collaborate with other fans to solve puzzles, complete real-life mission objectives, and win great prizes. Put your love for Trek into action by visiting TrekFan.org and help us move the world one step closer to the Star Trek future. Plus, if you'd like to support our programming personally, visit trek.fm/donate to get our new alien badges and art prints featuring original illustration by Tobu Ushi.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Star Trek Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me once again, as he is every single week, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Now, Matthew, you're looking a little bit different today. Is this one of those undeveloped looks that you created for yourself in the past but decided not to go with?
It is, Chris. It's where I part my hair on the other side, just to see what it would be like to be the reverse me, the me that, you know, I thought about going with, but I didn't. So, yeah, that's why I look probably a little off today.
That makes sense. You know, we all come up with those ideas that we think would be great. And then the more we think about them, we decide not to pursue them. And, you know, the writers of Deep Space Nine, they're no different than that. Over the years, as we've heard the writers talk, you know, on chats, like on AOL back in the day, or on DVDs or magazine articles in Star Trek Communicator, we heard stories about various ideas they had for episodes on Deep Space Nine that they decided, for whatever reason, not to produce. And someone on Memory Alpha has actually gone through and pulled together all those different bits that have come out over the years into one page. And we were talking about what we should do this week, and as a little bit of a change of pace, we thought it would be interesting to go through those ideas and just talk about them with each other. You know, what do we think about those ideas? Do we think they should have made those episodes? Are we glad they didn't? If they had made them, how would they have fleshed them out? Because, you know, a lot of these ideas, there's just not a whole lot there. And it seemed like it would be a fun thing to do.
Well, Chris, and I thought that it was interesting that one of the first episodes here is A Day at Quark's, and that Ronald D. Moore pitched the idea that you would have an entire episode revolve around just a day at Quark's and what that's like. And kind of wonder and think that that could have been a really interesting episode to just see what happens. You know, obviously Morn would be sitting there from the time it opened to the time it closed, but just kind of seeing the things that happen in and out, you know, the daily life of, you know, how Quark gets his information, you know, from the customers and all of that, and just kind of the, you know, Bashir and O'Brien coming in to play their, you know, holospeak programs. And I don't know, I actually think this would have been a fantastic Deep Space Nine episode, kind of lighthearted. And it wouldn't just have to have been a Ferengi episode, too. It could have been, you know, lots of different stories and how they all intersect at Quark's on the promenade.
Right. It reminds me a little bit of Data's Day on The Next Generation.
Yes.
In that we learn about other characters through Data. And, you know, his encounters with those characters, his plans for the day, and we learn about Data as well, but it's not just about him. So it could be interesting. I wasn't quite sure what I thought about it when I first heard about this idea. I picture things like, you know, Quark opens up the bar in the morning. I don't know. Have you ever worked, Matthew? I did this back when I was finishing university in retail, like in a shopping mall somewhere.
I have. I worked at the Disney store in late high school and in college. Yeah.
So you know what it's like when you go in, if you're opening the store that day and you have to go in and, you know, open the shutters and get the store ready for customers to come in. It could be like that. That's how it opens. Quark's opening his bar. And then I picture, like, I don't know, in, you know, cities where all of our listeners live, but in a city like Tokyo, we have a lot of these restaurants that are only open certain times of the day. You know, they're open for lunch and then they close and then they open again for dinner later. And I just picture, like, what happens in Quark's bar during that downtime. I know there probably isn't really any downtime, but imagine that there is. You know, we don't really get to see that. What does Quark do when it's not busy in the bar, when there are no customers, only Morn is sitting over there?
You know, interesting to see. Yeah, as well. I was wondering that too. Maybe Quark just kind of sits there and counts his latinum, or makes, you know, space calls trying to make more latinum. Tastes his own replicator food to see just how bad it is. I don't know. That's a great question.
But in all seriousness, I do think that this type of episode could fit very well into Deep Space Nine because of the character-driven stories and the way that the series works, because it's the kind of episode where you can set up certain storylines for your characters, or you can advance other storylines more easily than you might be able to do in another type of episode. Because if Quark is the stationary figure and other crew members are passing through the bar at different points during the day, it would give you an opportunity to push forward certain aspects of their life and even show us glimpses into their interactions with one another that we might not get to see in the midst of the usual type of episode.
Yeah, and I think it's also one of those things that Deep Space Nine did really well, is that you could use all of these side characters together and make them really work. And, you know, you could tell an entire story with these side characters without having it to be all the main characters the whole time. And it, you know, honestly, it really works best on Deep Space Nine. And so, yeah, I wish this would have been something that they would actually gone with. It would have been, I think, a really fun episode.
Yeah, it could have worked. So this one was mentioned by Ronald D. Moore during an AOL chat in 1999. And the next one, this one was mentioned in SFX, The Essential Guide to Deep Space Nine. And this one, I really wanted to get your thoughts on this one, Matthew, because I know you're a big Esri fan. This episode is called Dysfunctional, and we don't know much about it other than the plot would have been Esri secretly arranging to have the Dax symbiote removed, because we know that she never intended to be joined, at least not at that point in her life. And we see her trying to come to terms with the fact that she now does have the symbiote in her. It seems natural that she might want to get the symbiote out of her.
Yeah, this is something that is really interesting. You know, it makes me wonder how they would have done this story, because once you're joined, if you're joined for an extended period of time, you can't be unjoined without dying. And so how would, you know, Esri be able to have the Dax symbiote removed without dying? And then would they just be writing her out of the show already? You know, and then at the same time, this would have been an interesting episode because I do think you needed in the show, and they never really necessarily gave this to Esri, that moment where she decides she wants to be who she's becoming. And I think this would have been a great episode to be able to do that for the character, and then kind of have her move down a more steady path and really come to terms with who she is. She gets to do that a little bit when she has that in the line of fire with Jaran and kind of dealing with him differently than Jadzia did. But actually becoming her and her own person, I think this could have been an important episode, and maybe if they had had more episodes in season 7, this is something you could have done. I don't know. But I think it's a good idea. I think it's a good story idea to see her kind of come to grips with who she is. I don't know, Chris. I know you're not a huge Esri fan. What do you think?
I think it could have worked. It just depends on where they want to take the character, like you're saying. I'm picturing how she would do it. She's going to sneak off the station. She's going to go back to Trill. She's going to come back and then pretend like the symbiont is still there, because it says she's secretly arranging to have the symbiont removed. Or is it going to be one of those like things where she's going to keep it hidden from the Trill authorities themselves? So she's going to have it done. Who knows? I mean, there's no real information on it. Maybe she's going to have Dr. Bashir help her, and then they're going to conceal it from the Trill government. I don't know how that would work. I can completely see where the seeds for this episode were coming from in the writers' minds, because of you have this character who, and like you said, I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of Esri. I don't dislike Esri. It's just, you know, she came in the 7th season and they didn't have that much time to develop her. But I liked the idea of her character, that it's possible for a Trill to become joined without them wanting to be joined. But again, not by force, just by necessity, you know, situation that arises and how they deal with it. Because normally we've seen Trill become joined because it's been their lifelong ambition that they want to be joined. So it's very Deep Space Nine to explore the aftermath of being joined unexpectedly. So that would work for me. And I think it could work for me in whatever direction it went afterwards, concealing it from the Trill, concealing it from her crewmates on the station, or everyone knows about it and we just explore the psychological impact. Because you know there would be some, right? Maybe she didn't want to be joined, but she was. And during that time, she's experienced the memories of all those past lives. I have to think that if you then rip that away, even if you didn't want it initially, that's got to have some serious psychological impact on you.
Yeah, definitely. Because would your brain still retain a lot of those memories? And then you would have a really, really difficult time figuring out whose memories were whose without the symbiont to help you. So goodness, man, you could have really had some interesting issues. Although I do really think you wouldn't have ended up with her, you know, getting rid of the symbiont.
Probably not. Not on the show, no. But you never know. I mean, with Deep Space Nine, they were willing to take chances like that of doing something that you really didn't expect them to do on a Star Trek series. So perhaps they could have. It would have been interesting to see at any rate. But again, that didn't happen. The next one on the list here, again, this comes from another Ronald D. Moore AOL chat in 1999. This is the idea of Klingon Hell, and was the original concept for Soldiers of the Empire.
This was a cool idea, the idea that, you know, Worf and his crew would go to Grethor. I think would have worked a little bit better on Deep Space Nine because of the spiritual aspects of the show in the first place. Would have worked really well to, you know, we'd seen so much of the Bajoran faith and what that really looked like, even, you know, just in its actual existence, you know, with the prophets and inside the Celestial Temple. I think it would have been really beneficial on Deep Space Nine to have seen a little bit more of the discussion and actual, you know, Klingon hell. And I think Deep Space Nine would have done that really well. And it would have been cool to see, you know, Worf make this journey in a Soldiers of the Empire type of episode.
I think so, because this concept was ultimately used, but it was used on Voyager for the episode Barge of the Dead. So, you know, we do get to see the Klingon Hell and such. But like you say, seeing Worf go on this journey would have been much more interesting because of the entire background of his character, you know, his search for his identity as a Klingon. You know, B'Elanna was a lot of times trying to diminish her Klingon heritage. And there were reasons for that, and they were explained on the show and such. But this concept, like you said, would have been a very good fit for Deep Space Nine, because Deep Space Nine would have taken the more spiritual angle on it, and it would have been a journey for Worf, you know, I mean, kind of like what we see Sisko going through as the emissary of the prophets and involving the Bajoran faith. And we can, and it would have fleshed out the Klingon culture in a way that I would have really appreciated personally, because as we talk about very often, the Klingons are a little bit too monolithic, a little bit too static for my tastes. It changes a bit on Deep Space Nine with Martok in particular and Worf, but this would have really added some depth to the Klingons for me. I would have enjoyed it.
Yeah, definitely would have been a really good episode, I think, and just worked really well with what we've seen on, you know, Deep Space Nine in general. I think this is an interesting episode idea. That, you know, we didn't see a lot of these aliens in Star Trek in general, but there was supposed to be a Nausicaan episode where they would have been the enemy for an episode. Not a lot on this. You know, it was something that was mentioned by Ira Stephen Baer in 97 in Star Trek Monthly, issue 30. And he had said that this is actually going to be something that would happen, and obviously it didn't. So it makes me wonder what they were going to use the Nausicaans for there in 1997.
I think that it was probably going to be, you know, Quark sets up a Domjot table in the bar on the promenade, and the Nausicaans, you know, they did that on The Next Generation. No, I don't know. The Nausicaans, for me, I would not have minded seeing them used on Deep Space Nine, but I don't think I would have been very interested in a one-off episode where the Nausicaans were the bad guys, because I'm afraid that the story would have fallen more into a TNG-style story where there's some kind of raiders that, you know, there's just this one skirmish between the Defiant and a Nausicaan raider or something like that. And I don't know. I mean, maybe they could have come up with a story that would have been very interesting, but just a one-off, I'm not so sure. Now, to have the Nausicaans be involved in the Dominion War somehow, like the way the Breen were brought in, who knows? I mean, I think the Nausicaans could have paired up with the Jem'Hadar very nicely and been used as a supplemental force by the Dominion, something like that, if you wanted to bring them in and flesh them out. But what do you think? Would you have wanted to see a one-off episode with the Nausicaans on Deep Space Nine?
No, I don't think so, really. Actually, I was thinking it would have been really cool. You know, the Breen turned out to be the bad guys. I was thinking in the Dominion War, it would have been really awesome if the Nausicaans had turned into being, like, people that helped the Federation, just to really turn things on its head, you know? Just a really unexpected ally. They turned out to be kind of like the Bothans who had died. Many Bothans had died to bring us this information, you know? Many Nausicaans had died to bring us this information. That would have been, I think, a really interesting and just kind of strange twist that you wouldn't see coming, in the same way you didn't see necessarily the Breen coming.
Well, yeah, the Breen were just kind of out of nowhere. That could have been an interesting twist too. I think that would have worked better if the Nausicaans had been used a little bit more in The Next Generation, so that, and earlier Deep Space Nine as well, so that we had a little bit more of a feeling for who they are or that they're out there. But of course, they pulled the Breen off, and the Breen were just a spoken kind of running joke through Star Trek up to the point that they come in. So,
right.
Yeah, that could have worked as well. Nausicaan episode idea, though, for me, it doesn't really get me too excited. Now, the next one on the list is very interesting, though. And this was the idea of doing a sequel to the TNG episode Lower Decks and actually explaining what happened to Sito Jaxa after she went off with the Cardassian.
Yeah, this would have been interesting. You know, they say that she would have been imprisoned under inhumane conditions and suffered from a, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder. Robert Hewitt Wolf, you know, developed the story for a while, it says, but he just didn't really feel like it was, you know, coming together, like really giving you a reason for having her come back. And so to kind of ramp it up, he said that she would have killed a cellmate that she'd been close to. And in the end, you know, they just decided it would rob Lower Decks of its great ending. And they didn't really want to do this and just kind of take a character and kind of ruin her for a reason that wasn't really stellar. And, you know, I'd rather that not happen. You know, I'd rather there not be some sort of connection unless you have a really good idea for that. And so, and then, of course, they actually do use some of this later on for an O'Brien episode.
Right. For Hard Time, they have the case where O'Brien believes that he's killed his cellmate, and that punishment there. One of the torture O'Brien episodes.
Exactly.
That they put him through. Yeah, I'm probably with you on this. If they could do it really well, I wouldn't have a problem with them bringing Sito back and finding out what happened to her, because at the end of Lower Decks, you are left wondering what happens to her when she goes away. And at first glance, maybe you feel like, yeah, I want to have that blank filled in. At the same time, I think I agree with the idea that it would rob Lower Decks of its impact, because part of the strength of that ending is the fact that, you know, ultimately Picard and someone under his command, he had to send them off into the unknown. And, you know, that's a weight on your shoulders as a commander, and not knowing how it ends, again, is more real life than having someone come in and fill in the blanks. So probably not doing the episode is more the DS9 approach.
Yeah, definitely. But you're right. I mean, at the same time, they could definitely have made it. I mean, if anybody was going to make that kind of thing work, it's going to be the Deep Space Nine writing staff. I definitely had faith in everything that they had done up to that point, that they could have pulled this off if they had really wanted to. You know, I think this is one of those things where you can think of a great story idea, but does it really work enough to pull it off, you know? And I think that that's one of the things where I think the staff does a great job. You know, there's a lot of great ideas they had that they didn't necessarily go with. And it takes a good staff to know the show well enough to say, this is a good idea, but it's not the best idea we can do. And I feel like most of the time you get the sense that Deep Space Nine, you know, they have a few here off episodes here and there, but they went with their best ideas and not just their good ideas.
Right. Although I think I would have rather seen this episode than Time's Orphan.
Or Prophet and Lace.
Hey, look, I told you, Booze and Buddies connection there.
Well, I know.
Lay off the cross-dressing Ferengi, Matthew.
I'm sorry. I apologize, Chris. Oh, goodness.
Yeah. So a fun thing that happened on DS9, picking up from TNG again, was when Thomas Riker showed up on the station in Defiant. And I enjoyed that episode. You know, my position on these types of stories where you bring characters in from other series is that you only do it if it makes sense to do it and you can tell a good story through it, which again is why we don't really like Q-less very much. We love Q. We don't love Q on Deep Space Nine because it was just like saying, oh yeah, there's that Q character you like. He's going to be on DS9 this week. You should watch. Thomas Riker, on the other hand, that was a really interesting thing because when Second Chances ends and Thomas Riker goes away, you know he's going out there somewhere, and you know that he's going to chart his own life now, branching off from who he was before he was split. And what's that life going to be? And you kind of want to know that. And again, it's not a Sito Jaxa type situation where telling the story would rob you of some great ending. It's actually a case where telling the story helps to give more meaning, I think, to Second Chances.
Right.
By the fact Definitely. That, okay, we didn't just create a duplicate so that we could tell, you know, a cute story about Troy having to deal with two Rikers around, but we created another person who's going to have to live out the rest of their life. What happens after that? So bringing Thomas Riker onto DS9, I thought was a really good move.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that really worked. I think, you know, it would have been really interesting to see this character develop it. As they said here, Moore noted, you know, that Thomas Riker was really their character. They took him and mm-hmm. did something further with him and kind of molded him into the Deep Space Nine universe. And so they can really do whatever they wanted with him without having to worry about Will Riker. And that's a really cool thing to be able to do, especially with Frakes, who is definitely was all about returning as Thomas Riker, had a great time being able to play him and had thought it was kind of a no-brainer for them to do it. It apparently just never really worked out, which is kind of sad because this is the kind of reason that you bring back a TNG star onto Deep Space Nine like this, not just for a stunt, because you really have a story to tell with the character. And I am saddened that they never found the ability to, you know, bring Frakes back you know, create another story, or at least maybe even an ending story for Thomas Riker, or, you know, maybe some redemption, like full-on redemption for him, or, you know, make him a full-on right. bad guy or something. I don't know. It just seems like there's so many fun stories you could do with this character. And, you know, Jonathan is just such a joy to be able to watch when he's playing Thomas Riker, I think. It would have been fun to see what they did with that character. And, you know, Frakes is always willing to come back and do more Star Trek. You know, he always gives it his all, even if it's that episode that should not be named. Yeah, I would have loved to have seen this. I think it would have been great.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. I should say, before any TNG fans who are listening to the show write into us, yes, I said Second Chances, not just make a cute episode where Troy has to choose between two Rikers. Yes, we know very well, Matthew and I know very well, the heart of that story, of course, is about Riker reflecting on the choices that he's made through his life as he sees a duplicate of himself. So, you know, I think that you talk about a redemption moment for Thomas Riker. One thing that they say was considered, this is actually on extras from the TNG Season 6 DVD set. They say that there was an idea, in fact, I think Jonathan Frakes approached the writers about this, of having Thomas Riker be involved in Damar's rebellion. So one thing that I was thinking about was one possible reason for not bringing him back is that as the story ramped up in the later seasons of Deep Space Nine, I think the opportunities to bring someone like that back diminished, because there was so much going on, and how do you work that into the storyline? So if you're going to bring him back, you could do a one-off episode. You know, they did do those occasionally during the overall arcs in later seasons. But you want it to have some meaning. And, you know, I think Frakes' idea of having Thomas Riker become involved in Damar's rebellion could have been an interesting playoff of how Defiant wrapped up, and could have been a sort of redemption moment for Thomas Riker. What do you think about that?
You know, I think that that's like an incredible idea, honestly. I feel like that could have been worked in really easily, that Thomas Riker had found a way to become a part of the rebellion against the Dominion, was doing what he could against the Dominion. He had been able to find a way to to get into Cardassian space, be a part of the underground. Makes complete sense for somebody who wants to be very different than William Riker, and, right. and yet it except make his stand. And well, man, I would have loved to see this.
Well, if you think about it, so Thomas Riker became part of the Maquis, right? And when Dukat had the ability, thanks to Dominion power, to go in and eliminate the Maquis, he did it very quickly. You know, 3 days, right. bam, 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 Maquis are gone. That would have been the perfect motivation for Thomas Riker to align himself with Damar at the end to drive the Dominion away. Because ultimately, it's, you know, the Dominion influence came in and resulted in the end of that. So it could have worked out very well, I think.
Yeah, I think it would have been great. I would have loved to have seen this. I don't think it could have been, it wouldn't have been really exciting to see this kind of thing happen on Deep Space Nine. I think it would have been a good tie-in, and you could have really made it work.
Now, tell me if this next idea would be exciting to you. This is Ronald D. Moore's desire to do a musical episode where everyone has to sing, basically. The only way that they can communicate with each other is through song. What do you think about that, especially on Deep Space Nine?
I think it's really interesting. I don't know if I would have wanted to see it. I think, I think musical episodes on a whole are not my favorite unless it's on a show like Scrubs or something. And I think then I would have really, works. But this would not be, I don't think, what I would have wanted to see, honestly. As much as, no. you know, they thought they could make it work, I don't think it would really work.
I don't think so either. There are certain TV shows, you know, as you mentioned there, Scrubs and such, and I guess they apparently did it on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I haven't yep. seen that episode, but there are some shows where you could make it work, and it could even be good and entertaining. Deep Space Nine is not one of those shows. I think about Babel and how people mm-hmm. feel about that episode where everyone right. just starts talking in nonsense. Now you're going to have everyone running around the station singing to one another. I think that if they had done this episode, I think that Move Along Home would have been supplanted by this episode as the worst episode of Deep Space Nine. And of course, our friend, my co-host from Warp 5, Kate, would have a different episode that she could watch over and over and over and love.
Yeah.
This one would not have worked for me.
Yeah. I'm just glad that they didn't make this episode.
I think that they did a good job of incorporating music into Deep Space Nine through jazz, through Vic Fontaine, even letting Sisko sing. That all felt right. It felt like part of the series, like a natural part of the series. Mm-hmm. I think that was incorporating music into the show very well.
Yes.
Full on musical episode. Nah, we don't need that. So, okay, one more on the list here. This is the last one. This one's called Quorum, Matthew. And the only thing we know about this is that it says Jack Trevino and Tony Marbury sold 3 stories to Deep Space Nine, but only 2 were filmed. The 3rd story sold about a year after the team sold Little Green Man and Indiscretion was called Quorum. However, it went unproduced. So, Matthew, I have to ask you, again, without knowing any more about this than we do, what do you think a story called Quorum might have been about?
Well, you know, Chris, the first thing that came to mind for me was a Ferengi legal episode with a quorum is what they would call their, you know, their jury. And I'm just imagining a bunch of Ferengi arguing about something in a courtroom. That's what I picture. I don't know. What do you picture, Chris?
The first thing that came into my mind also was involving Quark and Ferengi, but it was, maybe it could be a sequel to Bar Association, or it could be tied in related to Bar Association, where it's all about the inner workings of the Merchants Association on the promenade, and they're voting on things like refurbishments to facilities or allowing new shops to open. Maybe the Klingon restaurant needs to get a new license for blood wine or something like that.
Mm,
and of course, they all have to vote on it at their Merchant Association meetings, and they need a quorum in order to hold the vote. And they're having trouble doing it because maybe the Nausicaans come in and kidnap some of the shop owners. Maybe this could tie into that one-off Nausican appearance. And they have to rescue the shop owners to get them back so they can have a quorum and they can have the vote. Sound exciting?
See, this sounds like one of the most exciting unproduced Star Trek episodes ever. I feel like we need the non-canon novel about this. I think it needs to be reworked into the canon. Yes, let's do this. This is the best idea.
I've got it. Besides working the Nausicaans in, the third part of the story is that one of the things they're voting on is for the season's musical production that will take place on the promenade. And so different characters are coming in and auditioning. Of course, Rom is there singing The Lady is a Scamp. So that way we combine Ronald D. Moore's desire to do a musical with the desire to bring the Nausicaans back for one episode, and we find out what quorum means.
Excellent. Man, this is good stuff, Chris. I don't know why this did not get created.
I cannot imagine why. So, yeah, we have no idea what quorum was going to be about, other than it was, unlike the other ones here, which were ideas that were never really developed, this was actually a story that was sold. And so far, we just really don't know what it was about. Okay, Matthew, just to wrap up the show here, a little bit shorter show than we usually have, are there any storylines that, you know, or episodes that you wanted to see on DS9 that we didn't get that you wish they had made?
You know, I think it would have been interesting to see. I actually wish, Chris, that they had known and worked on a little bit earlier the storyline with the Daxes and the way that they were going to make that transition. I wish that they'd had a little bit more time to do that and create kind of a smoother transition. I think that would have been more helpful for the character. So I think that's the kind of thing that I would have liked to have seen. And in fact, honestly, I think that the episode that we talked about tonight, Dysfunctional, would have been a great episode to see for that character and kind of be able to move that character forward maybe a little bit more quickly or something like that and make her a little more established a little more quickly to give you a little more sense of you're not spending so much time trying to get her figured out. I think that's, for me, what I would have liked to have seen.
Do you think that if they had done that, do you think that it would have diminished the character of Ezri? Obviously, she would have been a different character. The things that you love about the character of Ezri, if they had had a smooth transition where the symbiote was passed on, do you think you would love the character as much as you do? Or would those elements that you love be missing in that case?
I don't know. Man, I'd have to think about that now that you bring that up, because there are some things that I really do love about the character, about her just being very different from Jadzia. And I don't think I want to take anything necessarily away from her. But I think what I honestly would have liked to see, you know, if Terry Farrell wants to leave the show and everything, I might have killed Terry off 2/3 of the way through this season 6. So you could give yourself a little bit more time with this character that you're going to create and try and shove into this, you know, 7th season. I think that would have been interesting, to give Ezri more time on screen and just have a little bit more time with the character so you don't feel like there's so much you're trying to do in one season. I think maybe that's what I'm thinking of. Not necessarily, that's what would have made it feel a little bit smoother.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. It's always bad when you have to kill off a character because of something completely unrelated to your vision for the story.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Chris, was there anything that you felt like that you would have wanted to see, or just, you know, you thought of, you know, unused ideas from Deep Space Nine that you would have loved to have had on screen?
Yeah, I was thinking about the different story threads that I felt were left hanging that I might want to know more about. And, you know, the writers really did a good job of tying things up. And of course, they left a lot of things untied at the end, which I loved, because I think that's how a series like DS9 should finish. But one thing that I would have liked to have known more about, and tell me what you think about this in terms of how it affects the overall story, is the prophets themselves, and how did their connection to Bajor come to be in the first place? Because it can be confusing at times with the prophets. You know, they live outside of linear time. They are, it seems, non-corporeal, yet they have this connection to Bajor and the Bajoran people where they feel like they need to guide and protect them. And why exactly is that? And so I think you could have possibly done an episode kind of like Rapture, where channeling it through Sisko, he could have had some sort of vision where we get to see a little bit more of that ancient history of Bajor, some sort of encounter between Bajorans and the prophets, or the prophets with the Bajoran planet, something about them that helps to fill in the blanks a little bit about why the prophets are there in the first place. Why is the wormhole right next to this planet? Why do they feel the need to protect these people? If they did that, though, I don't know. I mean, would that, again, I asked you if your idea would diminish Ezri, would that diminish the prophets for you in any way, or would that make it more interesting to you?
I think that that's actually a really good idea. I don't think it would diminish the prophets at all. I think it would add some clarity to just exactly what their relationship with Bajor is, because it is so tenuously connected throughout the series of why exactly these beings have such a desire to be a part of Bajor's existence and all of those things. I really like that idea, Chris. I think I would have really enjoyed that in getting that kind of background. I don't think that that ruins the mystery of the prophets at all, because still there's a lot about the prophets that you'd still be wondering about, asking questions about, and you'd still be left to your imagination. I think this would just be a great way of connecting Bajor, the prophets, and Sisko all together and really making that part just a little bit more clear. And I think that could probably really only help the story of Deep Space Nine at that point.
Okay. Yeah, I think it would help for me as well. I think you have to be careful how you handle it, because you don't want
to give
too much away in the explanation. But I think that the writer certainly proved to us over the course of the series that they could have taken that idea and found a way to maintain the mystery, but to tie it to Bajor a little bit more so that we felt that connection, but we still didn't quite know who these prophets were. And so we could still debate them here on the orb as we have in the past. So that could work. All right, Matthew. Well, this has been an interesting, fun little show today. Something a little bit different for us. You know, I've known about these undeveloped episodes for a long time, and it just seemed like one of those things that at some point we should talk about. So we did. And it was great, but it's not the only thing we've been talking about on Trek FM, of course, this week. We've been talking about many different topics, so here are some other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Orb.
Aliens of Deep Space Nine.
That's a really good question. I honestly never even thought to question the Vorta's idea of their own existence, and whether or not it was, you know, just a story.
The Ready Room.
A matter of honor.
Riker is the perfect person to go on this exchange because he has that confidence to go toe-to-toe with a Klingon to make his presence known and to get that authority right away.
To the journey!
The Malon.
I just loved how how immediately when the Malon came on, the main guy came on the view screen, he's like, I use 6 spatial charges. I expect to be compensated. Like, it wasn't even like, hey, you okay? Commentary, Trek stars.
Ronald D. Moore.
I'm saying that I don't know who the Ringo of Deep Space Nine is. But it wasn't Ron Moore, because Ron Moore has got to be the Paul McCartney.
Warp 5.
The Sphere Builders.
And it is a good concept. I think and obviously the reasons it was introduced were more because of the studio and wanting that looking forward perspective, you know, getting ahead of the 24th century.
Trek News and Views.
Darmok.
I've just bought a book and I say, what on? You know, what do you mean, what on? A Kindle or... No, I went to a bookshop. Went to a bookshop?
Literary Treks.
Assignment Earth Comics.
I kind of liked it in that it picks up from Assignment Earth, the Star Trek episode, where we find out that Gary Seven has been sent there to find out why the two agents who were supposed to be stopping that missile launch can't do it. What happened to them?
And introducing our new next generation show, Earl Grey.
My garage turned into a holodeck with some crepe paper and a nice grid pattern. I just could not get enough of it. That was Halloween. That was everything. And my parents very indulgingly gave me many Playmates toys because those things were awesome.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and get your daily Trek Talk fix. We have new shows for you every day of the week, and some days we even have 2, and you'll find them in iTunes, on Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zoom. You can download or stream from our website. We have many ways for you to get our shows, and you can get links to everything by going to trek.fm/pd for podcast directory. And Matthew, we have a review that was left for us actually back in August, and I just stumbled across it this week, and we would like to say thank you to Alder One, and also our apologies to Alder One for not acknowledging this review sooner. This was left in the Canadian iTunes store, which I don't visit very often.
Wait, Chris, is that when you were searching for Robin Sparkle's latest hit?
It was. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I kept playing Let's Go to the Mall on loop in iTunes all the time, and I finally thought I should check and see if she had a new track.
Ah, Sandcastles in the Sand was excellent, so hope you picked that one up as well.
Yeah. Also, I was checking to see if they had finally put her music videos into the Canadian iTunes store.
Oh, yes. All classics, must-haves for any fan of Robin Sparkles, especially her Canadian fans, so...
really is, but... So, Matthew, Alder One left this for us back on August 6th and said, DS9 is my favorite series in the franchise. I've been waiting to listen to a DS9-focused podcast for a while. Thanks for the great discussions and insights. So, short and sweet, 5 stars. We thank you for that, Alder, and we're glad that you're enjoying our discussions and insights on the show. You know, for us, The Orb is about exploring Deep Space Nine ourselves, and being able to bounce ideas off of each other is a great way to do that. And so we're glad that you're enjoying hearing those discussions as well. And for everyone else, you know, please drop by iTunes and leave us a review, a star rating and a written review. It only takes about 30 seconds, and it does help other listeners find The Orb as they search iTunes for Deep Space Nine podcasts. And also, we would like to remind you, if you leave a review for us in a store other than the US store, please shoot us a note and let us know that you left it, because iTunes does not give us any way to know that there is a review there. So we do keep an eye on the US store and we keep an eye on the UK store, but there are like 100 something different stores, and it's just not possible for us to go around every country every day or every week to check. So drop us a note, let us know it's there, because we definitely want to read it and to say thank you to you. And Matthew, let's also tell everyone where to contact us if they would like to leave thoughts about these undeveloped DS9 episodes or anything else about Deep Space Nine. You can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose The Orb, and that will come to Matthew and me by email. You can also drop by our forums at trek.fm/forums and talk to other listeners and the rest of the Trek FM crew. You can send us a voicemail from the website. On the right-hand side of any page, there's a tab that says Send Voicemail. If you click that tab, a box will appear, and you can use your webcam's microphone to record a message for us and upload it to us from the website as an MP3 file. In social media, you'll also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, and we're always on Twitter under username trekfm, tweeting away about that. Now, Matthew, when you're not, you know, writing your own concept for Deep Space Nine that will clearly go undeveloped since the show has been off the air for ages now, where can people find you?
Well, if you'd like to find me, Chris, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02, always tweeting out my brand new Deep Space Nine rejected scripts. And then, of course, you can check me out as well on the network doing the book reviews and doing literary treks where we talk books and comics together, where we have been slowly going through the Deep Space Nine relaunch. So if you enjoy Deep Space Nine talk, you will probably enjoy that as well. And then I do have my own personal blog. It is at 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Chris, when you're not lamenting the fact that some of these episodes didn't make it into Deep Space Nine and just crying, you know, huge tears into your beers, where can people find you?
Well, you know, yeah, I'm slowly coming to terms with the fact that I'm never going to see these stories, but... you know, you can find me lamenting away on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's a letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much anywhere in social media under that same username. And, you know, you can also find me over on my personal website at cbrianjones.com, where I am making some efforts to resolve this issue of these undeveloped stories by having some Nausicaans write a one-off guest post on my website.
That's a good idea.
So drop by there. Yeah, you know, I'm pretty sure I'm gonna have to edit, of course, because there's gonna be it's gonna be choppy English, and they're probably gonna write about Dom Jot.
Well, and probably some foul language. So.
Oh, probably. It'll be interesting to hear their take on it. But you can find me there, and then of course on the network. Besides literary treks, you can find me on the Ready Room, where I am joined often by Matthew, as well as other hosts from all across the network, and other special guests, as we discuss all 5 live-action Star Trek series and other special topics. And then you can find me on Fridays on Warp 5 with Kate Walsh, who we mentioned earlier in the show today. And on that show, we talk only about Star Trek Enterprise, very much in the way we talk about DS9 here on The Orb. So check those out as well. And Matthew, before we let everyone go, we'd like to ask you to please support our sponsors for this week's show. Your support of our sponsors is very important for making it possible for us to bring The Orb to you every week. First, there's Squarespace, the web's best hosting and CMS that makes it simple for you to create a beautiful blog, a website, a portfolio, an online store, really anything that you can imagine. You can create your own space today absolutely free for 14 days. There's no credit card required. You can use all the great tools that Squarespace has to offer. And then when you sign up, you can use offer code TREK9 to save 10% off your lifetime purchase on new accounts. You're really going to love Squarespace. Trek FM is built on Squarespace. I use it for many, many projects myself, and I have for 6 years. So support us and support Squarespace by going over to squarespace.com and getting that free trial. And we really thank Squarespace for their support of The Orb. Also, drop by trekfan.org. Now, this is not an ordinary Star Trek fan club. This is a place where you can collaborate with other fans to solve puzzles and complete real-life mission objectives. It's really a way for you to, you know, not just sit around and talk about Star Trek all the time, but jump into action and help us move the world towards that Star Trek future. So support us, support Trek Fan, step up, face that challenge, solve the first puzzle, and take the next step on your adventure. And we really thank Trek Fan for their support of Trek FM and The Orb as well. And lastly, if you would personally like to support what we're doing here on the network and what we're doing with The Orb, go over to trek.fm/donate. We have 8 different alien-themed badges and art prints over there. They are original illustrations by Toba Ushi, who does most of the artwork that you see on our website. You can mix and match the badges and the art prints. You know, choose which ones you want. We have different donation levels that you can choose from as well. And your contributions help us cover the costs of production, storage, and bandwidth that's needed to bring the show to you every week. So please support us by going over to trek.fm/donate and get your aliens today.
Thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you next time as we gaze into the orb.